This was a black and a white forever ago.
Right, first American, right?
Talked with Scott Philip Brown there, the president. This is a follow-up. We had hit this back, in the
winter. Yeah, the state forces are fighting communist aggression in Southeast Asia. Two South Vietnamese forces are at the moment holding fast in a very difficult ground combat situation caused by the massive communist invasion across the demilitarized zone. The South Vietnamese face additional attacks by the enemy that have been made possible by the heavily supplied equipment of new and modern types, which are being used in South Vietnam, supplied by the Soviet Union for the first time this year. Third, General Abrams will continue our troop withdrawal program directed by the President of the United States. We have brought home 500,000 Americans, and we will meet or beat the President's goal of 49,000 Americans in country by July 1, 1972. For the President has pursued the most forthright and generous peace offer at any time in history. If the enemy agrees to an internationally supervised ceasefire and the return of our prisoners of war, we will withdraw our forces from Vietnam within 4 months. This will bring an end to the war and a return of our prisoners. It will allow us to continue the movement toward a generation of peace, which is the goal of all Americans and is the goal of the Nixon doctrine foreign policy, which is supported worldwide by our national security strategy of realistic deterrence. Five, the American people always have supported our president when Americans are endangered and the cause of freedom has been threatened. This is no time for quitters or for a lot of talk about instant surrender. I don't think the American people want to clamber aboard some sort of a bug-out shuttle. I think they join the president and me in supporting General Abrams and our men and in opposing communist aggression. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be glad to respond to any questions you may have.
Secretary, you were referring to
I am referring to those individuals that would give the world the impression that the United States is willing to abandon its allies that we have become associated with in four multilateral and four major bilateral treaty commitments, which have been approved under our constitutional process by the United States Senate.
Mr. Secretary, you say we're not going to abandon our allies. I'd like to ask you, if the President's ceasefire proposal is accepted, and that means that the South Vietnamese and North Vietnamese are allowed to negotiate politically, is that not abandoning our allies?
That is not abandoning our allies. The peace proposal of the President's as far as the internationally supervised ceasefire has no conditions attached to it. The matter is subject to negotiation and should be decided at the negotiating table. Certainly this proposal for a ceasefire, which has been made before, is not an abandonment in any way of our allies.
Mr. Laird, you continually said that U.S. intelligence has been quite accurate in assessing the communist capabilities in the Vietnam theater. Why, in view
kind of ragged retreat in many parts of the country.
I do not believe the intelligence assessments which I gave to you on many occasions here in this room were in error. We notified you earlier of the road building that was taking place in the DMZ. We also notified you of the military buildup of the North Vietnamese in military regions, opposite military regions 3, opposite military region 2, and also north of the DMZ. The difference, of course, in this invasion is the fact that the North Vietnamese are using the demilitarized zone in violation of the 1954 accords as well as the 1968 understandings. This has given them a very short logistics supply route, particularly in military region 1. They have been conducting this invasion across the DMZ in military region 1 now for approximately 5 weeks. During this five-week period, they have been able to push into Vietnam some 22 miles in the five-week period. The situation that exists today is different than any other military situation in view of the use of the demilitarized zone in military region 1, and during this period of time, I might point out that there has been only one provincial capital taken in South Vietnam, and in that area where the massive invasion started during this five-week period, they have advanced some 22 miles.
Secretary, what kind of any Soviet response being made, and if there are any Soviet naval movements of any kind towards the area?
There has been no indication along that line. We have, various discussions going on with the Soviets at the present time. Many of you that cover the Pentagon regularly know that the incidents of the sea negotiations are presently in progress here in Washington. The negotiations continued yesterday and are continuing today. As far as Helsinki is concerned, those negotiations went forward yesterday and are continuing today. As far as naval movement, to answer that specific part of your question, there is no such evidence. As of the time of this press conference, no such evidence.
The mining of Haiphong and other harbors indicates to some people that your Vietnamization program has been a failure, since you had to go to these extreme measures to do so. Isn't it true that you did not expect to go to that extreme?
Lloyd, I appreciate your asking that question, and I want the visitors here in the Pentagon to know this morning, the visiting press, that I did not put you up to asking that question, but I'm delighted that it has been asked.
I'm a little more belligerent.
Normally you are, Lloyd. The Vietnamization program has to be assessed as on the basis of where we were in 1969 when the Vietnamization program was first announced. As you know, it was announced in Midway, the first decision of the president to start a withdrawal and turning over the responsibility on the ground and to start to turn over in the air logistics and artillery area also as a part of the Vietnamization program. This program of Vietnamization applies to the military, economic, and political problems that confronted Vietnam in 1969. At that particular time, there was no program to withdraw Americans from that area of the world and to turn over the responsibilities to the people of South Vietnam. The time that announcement was made, we had a troop ceiling in Vietnam of 549,500. Today we have a troop ceiling of 49,000, and we will meet or beat that figure on July 1, which has been established by the president. So during this period of a short 3 years, we have withdrawn 500,000. More important in my mind than the withdrawals was the fact that when this program was announced and during the period immediately preceding the change of administrations, casualties in South Vietnam as far as fatal casualties were concerned for Americans fighting on the ground. And we had 11 divisions there at that time with the ground responsibility. Today, every one of those 11 divisions is back home or has been taken out of our force structure. Those casualties were averaging 300 a week, approximately 300 a week. As you know, our casualty figure has been reduced to where it is now averaging 10 or less a week. Now, the President of the United States will not be satisfied until those fatalities, those Americans killed in action, reaches zero. But when one wants to point to progress in the Vietnamization field in turning over this responsibility, and as we move to get our casualty figures to zero, and that's what our goal, of course, is, and that's what part of the Vietnamization program was all about, one cannot help but point to that progress that has been made during this short three-year period, from 300 to less than 10 a week. In addition to that, one should point, I believe, to the fact that at the time this program was announced, the total cost figures of the Vietnam conflict, as far as the United States government budget was concerned, the total cost figure was up as high as $30 billion. The incremental cost in the year 1968 was approximately $22 billion. Those figures and those costs in terms of resources devoted from our federal budget have been reduced during this particular period of time by approximately two-thirds, a reduction of two-thirds as far as costs are concerned. I could point up to many other areas in where I believe progress can be cited. We have sort of an expansion ball club that's fighting in Vietnam at the present time. They've come into the fighting and have taken over the ground combat responsibility. I have told you on many occasions that the South Vietnamese will not win every battle or every encounter, but they will do a very credible job in the vast majority of encounters which they will have. The fact that three divisions of the regular forces of the North Vietnamese have only been able to move 22 miles in 5 weeks in the area where the attack first started, I think speaks well. Now, I don't want to say that everything is perfect as far as the South Vietnamese forces are concerned, because it is not. In some cases, the South Vietnamese have not fought as well as they should and have not had the strong leadership that is needed and necessary to have success on the ground battle that is going forward. But in most cases, this leadership and this ground combat capability has been performed by these individuals in a very credible fashion. And I only would recall the fact that in 1968, when the attack reached a very high level, there were 11, the equivalent of 11 American combat divisions on the ground. And with the exception of perhaps the first Arvin Division, the responsibility of facing the VC and the North Vietnamese attackers was an American responsibility, and today it is a South Vietnamese responsibility, and we are giving air and sea assistance to the South Vietnamese in carrying on this responsibility. I agree, as your question implies, that the decision will be made and the battle decided by the effectiveness of the ground combat. But we will continue to give the air and sea support that is necessary.
Mr. Secretary,
yes.
As our air and sea build up continuing, do we expect to see more aircraft and ships in the South Sea?
Yes, it is continuing. We have on the line today for the first time the Newport News with its 9 8-inch guns, and our insurance reserve, or our augmentation force, is continuing to be expanded as far as the air and sea is concerned. We also have the notification ships, which are on station at the present time, notifying all vessels in the area of North Vietnam of the mining operation and the fact that the mines will become active Washington time at 6 a.m. Washington time on Thursday. Yes.
Speaking of sea and air power.
Let's go right here, and then I'll go over here the next time.
Speaking of sea and air power, in the event that Mr. Nixon's program goes through, that the other people agree to it, we remove all our forces from South Vietnam within 4 months after that. Do we still plan to come to the aid of South Vietnam if the North renews the struggle on the battlefield with sea and air power?
If the ceasefire is violated, the question you ask is, if the ceasefire is violated by the other side, would the United States continue to use air and sea power at that particular time? This would be a matter that, of course, would be a decision would have to be made at that particular time. Your question is a rather iffy question. I don't like to conduct contingency plans, but I can certainly tell you that that would be my recommendation. Should the internationally supervised ceasefire be violated?
Meaning to do this, to come to their aid?
To use the air and sea power. That would be my recommendation. That's a very iffy question you ask. First, we have to acquire the international supervised ceasefire that is in the president's peace proposal before that question even should be answered directly, but we have some distance to go to acquire that internationally supervised ceasefire. But as I said earlier, this is the most comprehensive peace proposal ever made in our history, I believe, and I would hope that the enemy would realize the wisdom in accepting the proposal of the president.
Mr. Secretary,
I'll go over here.
Regarding the mines, Mr. Secretary, just two questions. One is, what's the United States going to do if the Soviet Union attempts to remove any of the mines the United States has laid? And secondly, could you tell us how long those mines will remain unactivated? As I understand it, there is an automatic set for.
First, we will take all steps that are necessary in order to maintain an adequate mining operation. As you know, mines are a passive weapon. No one has to get involved with a mine. That is a decision that is made not by us, but is made by those people that confront the mines. As far as the mine technology is concerned, the second part of your question, I will not discuss or divulge U.S. mine technology at this press conference, and I would hope that that technology not be made a part of the public record.
Mr. Secretary, is there any evidence?
Paul?
Sir, could you give us an explanation or definition of what the administration means by blockade? With these factors in mind, Cyrus Scott, who's something of an admirable lawyer, says that blockade is a legal term and has a lot of support in international law. Yet yesterday, Mr. Kissinger, and I believe the State Department, has spoken and said we weren't having a blockade. Could you talk to that, sir?
Well, of course, this is not in the terms that you refer to it, in Senator Scott's terms, and you quote Senator Scott, a blockade in the international sense that we are challenging ships beyond the territorial waters of North Vietnam. We are merely giving notification to all shipping that the harbors of North Vietnam have been mined. And we have notified the entire world, and we have notified the United Nations that we will not permit the landing of supplies in North Vietnam. This is a much different type of action than the international blockade to which you refer that applies on the high seas beyond the territorial waters of a given country. So there is a difference.
Secretary,
you welcome back over here.
In response to this attack by North Vietnam, the United States plan to send more sophisticated weapons to South Vietnam to respond to the Soviet sophisticated weapons, the offensive weapons?
Well, first, as you know, the United States military assistance program has very different restrictions and policy determinations that apply to it than the military assistance programs of the Soviet Union. Evidently, the Soviet Union has seen fit not to place restrictions on the military equipment that is sent to one of their allies. And they have placed no restrictions on the use of the military equipment thus far that have been sent to the North Vietnamese. In the United States, of course, because of provisions in the Military Assistance Act as well as in the Defense Appropriation Act, and in our justifications of these programs, we have always placed very strict constraints upon the use of military equipment which is supplied by the United States. We have made it evident to all countries accepting our military assistance that it must be used for defensive purposes and cannot be used to carry on aggression or to carry on an offensive act. This is the real difference that exists between the military assistance programs being carried on presently as they apply to North Vietnam as far as the Soviet Union is concerned, and the military assistance programs that we are carrying on in South Vietnam and, as a matter of fact, throughout the world. These restrictions that we have apply, of course, to Israel. They apply to the aid that we are giving to the Greeks. They apply to the aid that has been given and military credits that have been made available to our Latin and Central American neighbors. The Congress has always insisted that any military sales credit or military assistance program be applied in this way. As a matter of fact, there's a restriction in our programs for military assistance that prohibits even the transfer of those military equipments that are purchased or given on a grant basis to another nation, one of our allies. They cannot transfer any of those equipments to a third country. And this is the basic difference between the Soviet program and the United States program. The Soviet program is now being used and has been used, but presently is being used to help the violation of the 1954 Accords, the 1968 understandings, and they are carrying on aggressive acts in violation of these international understandings and accords. Yes, we'll go over here.
Have any ships gone in or out of the harbors during the two daylight hours? Or have any ships stopped or turned back outside the minefield? And do you see any sign that they're trying to sweep up the mines or send minesweepers down from Russia to sweep them up?
Well, now there are four questions there. I'll take the last part of your question first. No, there is no evidence at this time of a sweeping activity going on. The answer to that question is no, no evidence. The third part of your question has to do with the turning around of any ships. When the A6s left the two carriers and went in and carried on their successful first drop of mines at 9:04, I believe the exact time was Washington time, on Monday evening, There were some ships that were in the process of transit in the particular area, and there is some evidence that there was some change in course in some of those particular ships. Second part of your question has to do with the ships in port, whether there is any evidence of a change in their particular movements during this time. As you know, there's one more daylight period for ships to move out of the port area before the mines become activated in the Haiphong Channel. At the time the mines were being laid, there were some 36 ships that were in Haiphong. There were about 16 ships of the Soviet Union, five ships of the People's Republic of China, four ships which were carrying the flag of the British Hong Kong. There were British flag operating out of Hong Kong. There were two Cuban ships, one East German ship, three Polish ships, and there were five from Somalia. Those made up the total of the 36 ships. Thus far, there has been no major movement out of port or into port as far as these ships or the ships that were at sea destined for Haiphong. During the last daylight period, there has been some ship movement within the port itself, but there has been no massive movement of ships out of port or into port during this period. I think that answers all four sections.
Mr. Director,
yes.
In the event of the success of the mining operation, presumably would they turn then by the North Vietnamese to attempt to supply themselves by rail and by road? Presumably, U.S. bombing will have to increase at that time. With all of the statements by the North Vietnamese about civilian areas being bombed, what precautions are we taking? What about their charges that civilian populations have been bombed?
Every effort is made, of course, on behalf of the United States to minimize civilian casualties, and that is, of course, the instructions that our pilots will operate under as they interdict the rail lines and they take out the POL facilities in North Vietnam as part of this overall interdiction campaign. This campaign, which we refer as Linebacker, is a campaign to stop the movement of supplies, and the targeting is such that the civilian casualties will be very minimum. I do not want to say that there will be absolutely none. We will certainly carry them out in that fashion. But I would only point out that the enemy continues its complete destruction and lack of respect for human life and civilian casualties. Let me give you a few examples. Let's look at An Lai. It's a piece of territory 2 miles square. It's in Military Region 3, and those of you covering this building know the situation there and from the briefings that you've had. But during this period of time, this 2 mile square area concentrated with civilian population has had a bombing raid on it from artillery, which is very effective. 35,000 rounds have been placed against that civilian center by the enemy. Let's move on up to Phong Tri, which just across the DMZ, just a few miles across. The enemy had to move its artillery about 2 or 3 miles down over the DMZ and be in a position to carry out an attack, a bombing attack, through the use of artillery on Phong Tri. The 4 days before Phong Tri fell, the enemy was putting into that civilian population area a total of 3,000 rounds a day. And then on the last day, they put 4,600 rounds of artillery in on that civilian population center. They showed a complete lack of regard for the civilian population. They sprayed artillery into those civilian centers just as if they were using a water hose. And I think that this lack of regard for civilian population centers should be called to the attention of the entire world. Yes, Peter.
It seems to violate an understanding we've had with him. Is that report correct?
That is correct. There was a, and we announced this port call of a Gulf II class missile submarine here in this building sometime last week. We also announced, I believe yesterday, the departure of this submarine from Cuban ports. This, of course, is not a nuclear-powered submarine, but such a port call was made by the a Soviet a submarine. There was also a port call of a support-type ship, tender type, which had a training group on it, some possibly 300 cadets that also made a port call in Cuba. But we have no information of any missile-carrying submarine operating and using the Cuban ports as an operating base. A port call has been made. The submarine has left that port. I can give you the other ships that are in the port down there, but Peter, I think the question that you have asked, we've handled that on a regular basis here in a routine fashion here in the Department of Defense at our regular briefing.
Secretary, yes. You said shortly after the invasion started that we would continue our air and naval support until there was a withdrawal. Has there been any change in that position? Would the United States now be willing to accept a ceasefire that took existing battle lines in order to bring an end to the immediate fighting?
It is true. At my press conference, I said that we would not entertain negotiations until the enemy had crossed back across the DMZ. That position, of course, has been changed by the President of the United States, and my position as expressed at that time is no longer the position of our country. My position is out of date.
Mr. Secretary, once the mines are activated, how soon do you expect it to affect the battlefield in the northern part in South Vietnam? And how deeply do you think the blockade, or whatever you want to call it, how deeply do you think it will affect the progress of the battle?
To answer your question, you have to take certain assumptions, and it depends on what those assumptions might be. To give you a clear and precise answer, the conditions could vary somewhat. I can only say that in some areas, the North Vietnamese have supplies on hand of 2 to 3 months. In other areas, they may have supplies on certain items for a longer period of time, and some a shorter period of time. The effect upon the battle area will be whether or not the enemy makes the decision to continue an all-out effort and go to zero as far as their supplies are concerned, or whether they feel that because of the interdiction or the stoppage of supplies that they can anticipate in the future, this will have an effect upon the level of battle in the particular area. So the proposition that you placed before us this morning is one that is difficult to answer, because the intentions of the enemy have to be read into the equation, and I am not prepared to read those intentions, whether they are willing to go for broke in 4 or 5 weeks, or whether they are willing to use their supplies in a much more measured manner, depending upon the success or failure, as they see it, of the supply movement and the logistics movement into North Vietnam.
Secretary,
yes.
In light of your statement that this war is going to be won on the ground, shouldn't we be having a massive airlift of tanks to the South Vietnamese now to help them increase their firepower? And then second, shouldn't we be bombing the tunnel on three railroads coming in from North China?
First, logistics supplies to the South Vietnamese. I can assure you that the logistics supplies that we are making available to the South Vietnamese are adequate, and every effort is being made to give the South Vietnamese the assurance as far as supplies, equipment, and the logistics that are needed to carry on their defense of their homeland. I've had a mission out there which has been reporting to the President of the United States and been reporting to me, headed by the three logistic generals in charge of all of our three military services here in the United States, as well as the J-4 of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This group has been chairmaned by the Assistant Secretary of Defense, Barry Shillitoe. And every effort has been made to supply the needed logistic support for the South Vietnamese, and we have given them those assurances. As far as tanks are concerned, the South Vietnamese have not encountered great difficulty with the tanks thus far. The first two or three days, the South Vietnamese were somewhat caught by surprise at the massive movements of tanks into the battlefield area. But they found out after a short period of time that they were able to destroy these tanks very effectively, and they have done a good job. This is particularly true of the airborne, and it's true of the Marines up in Military Region 1. They have done a tremendous job as far as tank destruction is concerned. They have been aided, of course, by our tactical air. One of the main problems that they've faced has been the artillery fire. And the knocking out of the North Vietnamese artillery has not been a question as to whether we had the weapons to knock out the artillery. The weapons are there, both as far as air is concerned and other means that are available to the South Vietnamese to knock out the artillery. The problem has been the location of the artillery, and the South Vietnamese are moving in this area. I've had the opportunity to meet with several of our younger military advisors who have come back, captains and majors, and I've had them in and I've talked to them about this. They feel that the South Vietnamese will have to move out to locate this artillery. We have the means of knocking the artillery out as soon as it is located and pinpointed. It is not a question of the weapons at the present time. It's a question, of course, of the aggressive leadership of the forces of South Vietnam, and President Tu has taken actions recently, I believe, which are very important as far as this leadership question is concerned, and they will have to understand, and they do now understand, this very grave responsibility which is theirs, the ground combat responsibility. But they have been assured logistically that we will support them. They've also been assured that we will give them the air and sea support which is needed and necessary to influence this very important decision on the ground.
Two points of clarification, sir. You say there have been no massive movements into or out of Haiphong Harbor since the bombing. Has there been any movement of any ships out of the harbor or its estuary since the mining? And the second question, sir, also to clarify.
Yes, there has been some movement, but the problem is, Bill, and I'm not trying to hedge on your question one bit, some of the ships were in the particular area of movement and before they actually got into the docks and alongside the docks. And there is a difference, and that's why I answered the question in the way I did earlier this morning. What's the second part of your question?
The second question, sir, has to do with the interdiction in the territorial waters or claimed waters of North Vietnam. Should any flagship belonging to a country other than North Vietnam attempt to enter those waters to land cargo on the shore, is our policy to attack those by land or sea, sir?
Our policy is to stop the delivery to the North Vietnamese of these supplies, and we will take those actions that are necessary to stop that delivery.
Mr. Secretary, yes. AN-22 is coming in to North Vietnamese airfields. What do we do about those?
We will take those actions that are necessary to interdict and stop the supplies of equipment to North Vietnam. I'm not going to get into a discussion of the operational orders and the contingencies that may arise. I can tell you that we will take the steps that are necessary to see that these supplies are cut off that are being used to carry on this aggression and this marauding throughout Southeast Asia.
Mr. Secretary, the President obviously sought advice from many quarters before this decision was made. Was the mining of Haiphong Harbor your personal recommendation to the President? And are there any plans, contingency plans, for the landing of ground troops in either North or South Vietnam?
I don't believe it serves any useful purpose to get into a discussion of possible contingency plans. We will take the action that is necessary to see that the program that has been ordered by the President of the United States, supported by the National Security Council, supported by his cabinet, are carried out fully. As far as the proposal as to when the decision was made by the President of the United States on Monday afternoon. Planning, of course, had gone on for a considerable period of time. And it should be of no surprise to you that such planning was going on. I was asked a question before the Foreign Relations Committee several weeks ago as to whether such planning was in progress and whether it was a possibility. I gave a short answer. The answer was yes. And that was 3 weeks ago.
Mr. Secretary, if the North Vietnamese go for broke here in the next month or so, the South Vietnamese withstand this all-out military offensive with the sophisticated soldiers like this?
The South Vietnamese have the capability, they have the equipment, they have the manpower to be able to do this.
But can they do it, do you think, in your evaluation?
My evaluation is, on the best information that's been made available to me by our military commanders, that they do have the will and the desire to carry out this defense of their home country.
I think I should clarify one point that is very important. Dr. Kissinger yesterday at his briefing said that there was no intention to stop ships that were going in, that the mining would be the only thing. You're leaving the implication here that this is a possibility. Is that what you meant to leave?
That is what I meant to leave.
You said the mines will be activated at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. On your information now, when will the first Soviet freighter, in the course that they're on now, run the risk of going into those mine fields?
Well, I'm not scheduling the Soviet freighters. There was one scheduled to go in, I believe, today or yesterday. It did not go in. I am not in charge of positioning the Soviet freighters and scheduling their movements into these particular ports. There was one scheduled that did not choose to go in. But I believe that question is a question that might at some future date cause me a credibility problem. And since I've been here, I've tried to cause no credibility problems. And that's the reason I'm not giving you a specific answer.
What was that freighter carrying, and do you have any description by name or number?
We do have the information, but I am not going to make it available.
What did that freighter do, sir? Standing off outside?
That freighter is at sea beyond the territorial waters of North Vietnam.
Secretary,
we interpret your ships that choose to remain in the harbor and continue to offload cargo after tomorrow morning. Are they susceptible to attack?
I have answered that question. We will take those actions that are necessary to prevent the delivery in North Vietnam of these supplies. And the actions will be taken that are necessary to see that those deliveries are not made in North Vietnam.
Where do you consider deliveries being made? At the dock of the...
Well, in the land mass of North Vietnam, I'm not going to get into just any specific dock. I consider the entire land mass of North Vietnam would be a delivery, if that is the question.
Earlier statement that we have notified we will not permit the landing of supplies in North Vietnam. Does that include delivery by air?
We will take those steps that are necessary to prevent the delivery of supplies that can be used to assist the North Vietnamese in carrying out their military aggression in Southeast Asia. I don't know how I can be any more forthright or make it any clearer than I already have.
In other words, Mr. Secretary, you're not playing games with the idea that they can offload the material and then we hit it on the dock. You're saying we're not going to allow them even to put it on the dock.
I am saying that we will take those actions that are necessary to prevent delivery into North Vietnam.
If the North Vietnamese do break through around Hue, are any American troops close enough there to be threatened by that action?
Of course, we have a large number of Americans that are not far from there at Da Nang, which are, of course, in the general area. If these troops are in the general area of Military Region 1. I would point out, however, that this has been going on for 5 weeks in Military Region 1. If you'll go back to 1968, and it was just a question of a few days before the North Vietnamese were able to, with the assistance of the VC, to take over and almost control Hue. The situation in 1972 is somewhat different than the situation that existed in Hue and in Military Region 1 when you compare these two large actions of the North Vietnamese forces.
Mr. Larry, can I ask you about the mining and then the interference with shipping deliveries? As I understand it, maybe I'm incorrect, this is what I'm trying to determine. Is this a warlike act? Are you really, in effect, carrying out a warlike act against other nations' shipping, and therefore does not require a declaration of war?
The situation is such, as you know, Lloyd, that mines have been used by the enemy in the south and in the tributaries and in the rivers in the south over a period of time. We have had damage done to ships from the mines that have been laid by the North Vietnamese. These have been, in most cases, Soviet mines that have been placed in those particular entrances to river facilities and in other areas in the south. I think it is important to point out that mines have been used by the enemy in South Vietnam.
Well, in other words, you're justifying your action on the basis of what the enemy had done in the South.
We're justifying our action on the fact that we perhaps need congressional authorization to place Americans and to commit more and more Americans to South Vietnam. At a time during 1966 to 1968, the force structure of the American forces was on the up and up and up. And at that particular time, as a member of Congress, I felt that congressional authority was needed and necessary in order to increase the commitment of American forces in that area of the world. We are reducing the commitment of American forces in that area of the world, and we are on the decline. This is true whether you go to Thailand. Some people like to say, well, we're increasing forces in Thailand. In 1968, or at the time of the Midway Conference, when President Nixon announced this program, those of you in this room know that there were 48,000 Americans, almost 50,000, as a matter of fact, in Thailand. At the present time, we are down to around 35,000, or in that general area, but we are 10,000 below in Thailand, where we were at the point of the Midway Conference. I can take you to the Philippines, Japan. In all of that area of the world, the reduction is significant on the part of American military forces. This is something I think that has been overlooked during the last few weeks.
Mr. Secretary,
yes, or you haven't had a question. We've got to take care of the regulars around here. It's nice to have all you visitors here in the Pentagon today, but I want to take care of the regulars.
Is there a brigade of the 3rd Marine Division afloat off Vietnam?
I am not going to give you the precise whereabouts of any of our forces, but Ori, you've covered this building for a long period of time, and you know that we have had Marines embarked upon certain ships in that area for a good long time, and I am not giving you any other answer than saying that from your own personal knowledge, you, of course, are aware that Marines do exist and are embarked upon certain ships in the 7th Fleet.
Secretary, should Hanoi announce tomorrow that it accepts the ceasefire, what could or would be done about the mine?
I'm not going to get into the mine technology. I do not believe it serves a useful purpose for us to discuss mine technology, which is a very important
There have been very important improvements as far as mine technology is concerned over the years, and we are not going to discuss mine technology today, or we are not going to divulge the technology that the United States has acquired in this particular military field. We feel that it is a very fine passive weapon, and it, we've made improvements in this program. I know I went on a Defense Appropriations Committee back in 1952, and I have been familiar with these programs over the years, but I'm not going to discuss the technology or the involvement of that technology over the last 10 or 15 years.
Thank you, Secretary. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a live news conference of Defense Secretary Melvin Laird at the Pentagon. Most of the questions dealt with the new war situation in South Vietnam, and particularly pertinent were the Secretary's comments on the mining of seven North Vietnamese ports. The Secretary indicated that at least one Soviet freighter, shortly after the President made his announcement on Monday night of the mining operation, the one Soviet freighter...
Except that there has been a great many, there have been a great many meetings of Soviet leaders in Moscow that have been reported among fairly senior administration officials here, is that the Russians will have no option but to cancel out or certainly postpone the President's summit in Moscow.
Now, Secretary Laird also said that the buildup of U.S. forces is continuing. However, he said that the administration intends to continue along its withdrawal schedule. And, Bob, there's an intricacy involved there in ground forces and air and naval forces, I suppose.
Yes, I thought one of the interesting comments that the Secretary had today was he said that the South Vietnamese are holding fast. He was a bit more encouraging about how the South Vietnamese are handling things, although he said things are not going in a perfect way, I think was his phrase. But yesterday, only yesterday, Security Advisor Henry Kissinger was describing the situation in Vietnam as precarious.
Thank you very much, Bob Schieffer, Pentagon correspondent, Marvin Cowell, State Department counter correspondent. For CBS News in Washington, this is Nelson Benton.
Prepared the South Vietnamese Army to a ball club expansion team, a new team in the...
...needed to try to land equipment into the hands of the North Vietnamese. He would not be very precise in his answer. He was deliberately vague, I thought, but he indicated the United States would take whatever steps are necessary to prevent material from landing in in North Vietnam. With me here at our studio in Washington is ABC's Frank Tomlinson, who has covered the Defense Department. I thought the Secretary didn't give anything away today in brief news conference. Did you, Frank?
Not at all, Frank. He didn't say anything specific, although I think one of the highlights was his saying that they stopped somewhat short of saying that they would bomb any flagship trying to enter any North Vietnamese port. He repeated his action continually, saying, "We will take all necessary action to stop any deliveries." Well, this seems to get down to a fine point. What do you mean by deliveries? Does this mean going into the port or unloading at sea? And it also points up, I think, a bit of a difference with the White House, because yesterday Mr. Kissinger said that we would not intercept any foreign ships that were headed for North Vietnam. And when Mr. Laird was asked that specific question, he just said, "We will take all steps necessary."
Yes, I think he was trying to harden, possibly, the impact of Kissinger's words yesterday. He said that we would content ourselves, at least for the moment, with warning foreign flag vessels of the presence of the minefields, and if they wished to proceed on their own, they would, of course, run the risk of running into one of those mines. The mines will become operative or effective at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, Eastern time or Washington time, and, of course, the Defense Department will be watching very carefully to see whether there is any movement in or out of Haiphong and the other ports. Secretary began his news conference today by making 5 points. The chief one, I suppose, was that our air and sea buildup will continue in the area off North Vietnam, that we will continue to take all steps necessary to prevent the landing of supplies. He said this is no time for quitters or talk about instant surrender, and as the man who is in charge of the Pentagon, a place where some new acronyms and new phrases have come into being in recent years, I thought perhaps he coined another one today when he said the American people are not ready to jump on any bug-out shuttle.
He was referring, as he said, to those individuals who would give the impression that the United States is ready to abandon its allies in South Vietnam or anywhere else in the world, for that matter. And he tried to make it just as strong as possible that the U.S. has no intention of abandoning any of the...